Well, that was a nice introduction, not too much baloney, and it's wonderful to be here. Every time I see that memorial, it's amazing. And it reminds me that freedom is not free. Never forget that. It is not free. On April 5th, 1954, I arrived in Korea. The American troops had already been there for over 3 years. I had just been commissioned a second lieutenant, was assigned to the 1st Battalion, 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines, 1st Marine Division. For the previous 9 months in boot camp and at officers' training, I had been trained by men who'd come back from this forgotten war. Within hours of landing at Gimpo Airport, Seoul was in ruins. I was assigned a platoon holding the hills at the 38th parallel on one side of the invasion route that was used 3 years before by North Korean and Chinese forces. It's always interesting to reflect on a great conflict like this. From 1910 to 1945, Japan controlled the entire country of Korea. It's a little bigger than Minnesota. It's longer, but it's skinnier. In 1945, after the defeat of Japan, the Great Powers divided Korea at the 38th parallel. To the north, the Russians controlled. To the south, we controlled. In August of 1948, the Republic of Korea was established under the presidency of Syngman Rhee. In September of the same year, the Democratic People's Republic was established under the communist dictatorship of Kim Il-sung, whose son today rules North Korea. Both Soviet and American forces had been withdrawn from both countries in 1949. However, the Russians didn't withdraw until they had trained and armed a powerful North Korean force. The South Korean army, on the other hand, was trained and equipped with little more. It could do little more than police action. By March of 1949, we now know that Kim Il-sung had requested from Stalin the okay to invade South Korea. In April of the same year, he talked to Mao, the new leader of China, who was just driving Chiang Kai-shek to Taiwan. In January, Secretary of State Dean Acheson indicated that Korea was outside the American defense perimeter. It was now clear to all three communist dictators that the time was right to strike. On June 25th, 1950, at 4 o'clock in the morning, along the 38th parallel, the North Korean army commenced an immense barrage of heavy artillery and mortar fire. Over 130,000 well-trained North Korean troops, supported by over 160 heavy Russian tanks, smashed into the lines of the 65,000-man South Korean army. They had no effective anti-tank weapons. They had no heavy artillery. Within 3 days, Seoul had fallen. Within weeks, the nation was in dire straits to be overrun. In the next 3 years, the United Nations and South Korean forces suffered over 500,000 casualties, including 33,000 American battle deaths. On hearing of the invasion, President Truman acted swiftly, calling a meeting of the United Nations Security Council for the same day. He obtained the unanimous consent because the Russians were boycotting the Security Council. Fortunately for us, they weren't able to veto that action. Within a few weeks, the remnants of the South Korean army and the buildup of our forces were defending a 50-mile perimeter around the port of Busan. On August 31st, 1950, the North Koreans made their final assault on the Busan perimeter, a vicious battle. The same week, General MacArthur was planning the Incheon landing. In a matter of weeks, 260 ships were assembled. 70,000 men were moved to outflank the North Korean forces. The Incheon landing began September 13th. And by September 27th, after a bitter street fight, Seoul was freed. The question was then faced, do we go north to the Alu? On October 1st, President Truman okayed the UN advance north of the 38th parallel. On October 8th, Mao ordered Chinese troops to begin moving from Manchuria to North Korea. Our 8th Army was on the east. The Marines were on the west. In 1 month, the Chinese deployed 180,000 troops to destroy the army on the east and sent 120,000 troops to destroy the 15,000 Marines and Korean troops of the 10th Corps. November 1950 is known in the Marine Corps as the month of hell in Korea. 18 Chinese divisions rolled back the 8th Army, leading to one of the longest withdrawals in the history of the American Army. On November 27th, the Chinese struck and surrounded the Marines at the Chosin Reservoir. Our troops lacked proper winter clothing and equipment, yet had to sleep, eat, and fight day and night in bitter cold. The Marines then mounted an epic breakout. They fought their way down the road to Hungnan. The Chinese would attack at night, and the Marines would move and clean them out of the ridges with supporting air power during the day. One-third of the division, for 4,700 men, were killed or wounded. Withdrawal from Hagaru to Hungnan took 8 days. From December 10th through Christmas Eve, the United States Navy evacuated all of our troops and nearly 100,000 Koreans who wanted to leave. On January 1st, 1951, the 8th Army had retreated 50 miles south of Seoul, and Seoul had been retaken by the Chinese. The Chinese made one last offense, which was stopped. We then counterattacked. Seoul was retaken by UN forces on March 14th, and by March 27th, the United Nations forces were again at the 38th parallel. March 30th, 1951, the Chinese made their final attack. They were unable to break the UN lines. It's a great hill called Gloucester Hill, big cross on it, where the British battalion fought and died. 8 days later, Chinese attack was stopped, and 2 years of stalemate followed. And it was, you know, finalized finally. Let me just summarize what I think was accomplished by this difficult and forgotten conflict and how it has some relevance to what's going on today in Iraq and Afghanistan. For the first time, the United States was able to get the United Nations to stand firm against a brutal dictator and a brutal aggressor. Now, we were lucky. The Russians were boycotting, and as you know, they financed and trained the North Koreans. By stopping this invasion, we prevented a communist takeover of Korea, which would certainly have undermined our position all over Asia, and what would we have done with a disarmed Japan? Because we discovered in the Korean conflict that the mastermind behind it was Russia, we were able to transform the Atlantic Alliance from a political coalition into an integrated military organization headed by an American Supreme Commander to stop the Russian advance in Eastern Europe, and we did. For me, it was my first experience with totalitarianism. I learned firsthand in Korea why the world cannot allow brutal dictators to occupy key areas of the world. I learned that the rule of law was important. My own interpreter, both his mother and father, were shot and killed by the North Koreans when their village was taken within 20 minutes after the occupation of that town. And I learned that democracy and the rule of law is important. And our country was, in fact, for the first time, the leader of the free world. Whether we like it or not, we are the leaders of the free world. Finally, we saved a wonderful country with more than 40 million people from a brutal and fanatical dictatorship. South Korea has prospered, became a true democracy in 1988. I have met with many of their leaders, their judicial leaders. It's one of the political giants of Asia today, fourth largest country in Asia, 14th largest country in the world. Hyundais are running all over our streets. I'm convinced that sooner or later there will be one Korea, and if the free nations stand solidly behind South Korea, it will be a free Korea. Now let me just turn for briefly to the problems we face in Iraq and Afghanistan. All of us will never forget September 11th. The president acted brilliantly, I think, and routed the Taliban from Afghanistan without committing an enormous numbers of men and materiel. And I think recently we real saw that a constitution has already been set forth. It's going to take years. This is a country that had known nothing but chaos and totalitarianism for 30 years. Only a few weeks ago, the United Nations Security Council voted unanimously to help the Iraqi people build a peaceful and free Iraq. Saddam Hussein and his government defied over 14 resolutions of the United Nations before we took action. Let me read from a judge who opposed this war. He lives in Shreveport, Louisiana. He's a federal district judge. This is what he wrote. In May of this year, I traveled to Iraq with a dozen other legal experts to assess the Iraqi judicial system and make recommendations for the future. Initially, I vehemently opposed the war, but after spending 5 weeks among the Iraqi people, I became convinced that whether we find any weapons of mass destruction or prove Saddam sheltered and financed terrorism, President Bush was right to intervene. When I left Iraq in mid-June, 57 mass graves had been found, one with the bodies of 1,200 children. There are credible reports of murder, brutality, and torture of hundreds of thousands of ordinary Iraqi citizens. Yet thanks to the coalition forces, the United States primarily and Britain, the torture is stopped and the foundation of justice is being laid. Security, though lacking in parts of Baghdad, a city larger than New York, and the Sunni Triangle is improving. New Iraqi policemen are being trained and deployed. Most of the country is relatively secure and functioning. We need to remember that the vast majority of Iraqis want us there and fear we may leave too soon. The Iraqis I keep in touch with me tell me each day is better than the day before. This has been our experience in a defeated Germany. I'll never forget the editorial blasting our government because we weren't doing enough after we had taken Germany. A defeated Japan took us a long time. MacArthur was there for many years, develop and sustain a government of Japan and, of course, South Korea. And, of course, more recently, it also has been our experience in Bosnia and Kosovo. I don't know if any of you in this room know, but over 850 men and women from this state are in the 2nd Battalion of the 136th Infantry Division over in Bosnia and are serving as I speak. We must understand this is a choice between taking the fight to terrorists and their brutal benefactors or waiting for them to blow up two more buildings. Interestingly enough, we have now found documents detailing Iraq's attempts to buy missile equipment from North Korea, which is now governed by the son of the dictator when I was there. We must never forget that today we live in one of the most remarkable democracies ever produced on this globe. Just think, I can go in this town to any religious group, any of the major religions, a place of worship, without fear. I can walk the streets complaining about Fran Bradley or any of my other elected officials. I can curse the governor. Someone this morning was criticizing the president. No one can enter my home without a warrant. I have a police force that I'm proud of and that I think uses good skills and handles people well. It's an amazing place to live, and there's no place quite like it on this tiny globe. In Korea, we did not conquer. We survived and endured. We never took one acre of land in World War II, except to build where we buried our dead in Normandy. South Korea today is free and a democratic nation. We still have over 30,000 troops in South Korea. We have to learn the same lesson again in Iraq. Freedom is never free. It doesn't come without patience, perseverance, and sacrifice. Every time I see this beautiful memorial, I give thanks to the men and women who have served in our armed forces and made it possible. It's our job now to train our children and grandchildren to appreciate and protect the freedoms we often take for granted. I'm confident we will. Thank you.